Welcome, everyone, to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast, Tuesday, August 23rd, 2022. Ian Ferguson is on location at remote spot right now recording, but I'm Pat Contry here in the studio. On the show today, we'll be talking about the Sega Genesis Mini 2 lineup, the Sunsoft event. We're talking about the top Super Nintendo games, a list from journalist Seth Abramson. Also some voicemails back to there. Ian spoke about his heroic pinball efforts recently, and I spoke about my Dollar Tree adventure, including finding Battleship Colorforms version. Get all the deets on the exclusive Patreon podcast that we do every week, patreon.com/CU podcast. Other than that, Ian, how are things going?
I mean, they're going. Yeah, we talked a little bit about the pinball tournament I played in. Life has been kind of stressful, so I've been playing more pinball just to kind of clear my head. But I did, big news. our buddies over at Chu Hai Labs released a new game last week.
That's right.
Curse to Golf.
That's right.
And I've been looking forward to this game for quite some time. And I got it, and it's fantastic. It's kind of not roguelike, isn't exactly the right word for it, because it's not all randomly generated, but it's a golf game with constantly changing holes, and basically you just have to hit it to the goal within a certain amount of hits, but there's all sorts of traps in the way. And it's a 2D game. It plays on a side view, so it's not the usual overhead golf. It's you're basically navigating the golf ball through platforming levels, and you have to do it in a certain number of shots, and it's incredibly addicting. The very first time I saw the idea when Liam was kind of just, he basically made like a little proof of concept game.
Okay.
And from the first time I saw it, I knew it was going to be like a hit. And from everything I can see, it's gotten great reviews so far. So congrats to them. It definitely was fun for me to play over the weekend when I needed to, do something.
Sure.
So
I get it. So probably very exciting when you have a new game finally come out. It's like, oh, you can see the finish line, and you're doing all this work to get it out.
Yeah,
hope to check.
I think it really shows you just like how much work is involved in the polish too. Because
sure.
From the time, maybe it's just because I really wanted to play it, but from the time that the proof of concept he kind of like worked on, got it out there and put it on itch.io to final product, it was a long time. There's a lot that goes into, taking a great idea and crafting it into something that, a large market would want to play.
Oh yeah.
So
it's very simple to have. Anyone can think of a game idea, and then even a lot of people can start to try to do it, but then it's like, okay, now I'm actually in here. How is this actually fun?
Right.
What is a user experience like?
And how do you polish it off? I'm the sort of person who, I can play a pretty rough around the edges game and still enjoy it as long as the central idea is sound. But yeah, so many people expect, a shiny package, and a lot of work goes into that.
Yeah. What else is happening? I am a third of the way through the final season of Knight Rider. Season
I'm sure
four.
Things are getting dicier.
Just because, like, season three was pretty positive in terms of, oh, this is some interesting stuff going on here. How do you expand upon the concept of a talking car, sure. Year after year? But it was a super popular show the first few years. There was some toys. I looked it up on eBay last night. I was talking to Andre. There was not an action figure line. They had one toy that it talked, and it came with Michael Knight. You can buy a Michael Knight separately. Michael Knight's actually not worth that really anything. Like $20 you can get one, just a 3¾ sort of size or 4-inch figure, or 5-inch figure. But there was no like toy line. There was no like There was no like Devin Miles, old guy, old British guy figure. There wasn't Bonnie, the mechanic figure. You know, there wasn't villains and things like that. Like A-Team had whole figure lines. They had three three quarters and they had 6-inch figures. They had the bigger ones as well. They didn't have that for that, maybe because it was more geared towards adults. Maybe, you know, kids are into it, but they had like little die cast. I had a die cast car from a flea market, you know, things like that. I think they had like the stunt set. I think they might have had like a electric car set, like, you know, you know, where you had a little trigger and go around the track, but with Knight Rider. But there wasn't a lot of stuff. I don't remember seeing anything really as a kid, because I was too young, because the show was done by 86. That was it.
Yeah, I don't remember anything either. And I same thing as you. That show, in terms of my memories, you know, reruns, predates me just a little bit. But yeah, it was, I saw it in reruns and syndication. That was where I got used to it.
What's a rerun? You'll find out. What else is happening here? Went to the flea market. I returned to the flea market. I haven't gone to the flea market. Is it once a quarter I go? Once every 4 months? I think I went earlier this year.
I would say probably about that.
And it was on a whim. And I got up at 8 o'clock and I'm like, I'm going to go. Usually if I get up at 6:30 and get there at 7. And I probably would have found some stuff, maybe, not really game related. The game stuff is slim pickings. I found a lot of 70s toys. Follow me on Twitter at PatTheAniusPunk. I do threads when I go nowadays if I'm not filming, obviously, because if I filmed, I find nothing that I actually buy. You know, I find cool stuff like, oh, here's Ultima One, and pal Derek, who sells there, he wanted $1,200 for it. If I was saying, Derek, no one's bringing $1,200 in cash to the
flea market. Like, no. What are you fucking doing?
You're lucky to find someone who gets $120 in their wallet, let alone $1,200.
Yeah, you don't take that at that point. It's just that sounds silly, but it's the pollution of the very idea of a flea market. Flea markets are supposed to be cheap places to go and buy stuff, and it's absolutely not a place where you go to make a fucking centerpiece purchase for your video game collection. Like, that's weird. It doesn't. Like you said, who's bringing that kind of money to the flea market? Who even goes to the flea market expecting to find something like that?
I mean, he usually had good stuff. I bought PC games on him before, but I here's the thing. I don't keep up with the track of these. I actually own that game. Sure. I think he had the IBM one. I think the Apple II one. They're the same feelies, the same exact stuff. It's just the disc. It's a different sticker on the front of the box, and the disc is obviously different for the game. But most collectors don't care about that when it comes to that. And you know, I thought he said $12 at first. I felt awful because he's like, "Oh, $12? Okay, I'll pick that." Then he said $1,200. I was like, "Oh," in my head, I should have said, "There's no way it's only $12." He would know better. But he did give me some decent deals and stuff before. But I thought maybe it's worth $120, and maybe he. Whatever. I felt stupid because, like, oh, here's my wallet. It's like that scene in Lethal Weapon at the beginning when he's – ever see Lethal Weapon?
No. Seen it.
It's a Christmas movie. Again, another Shane Black. He writes all these stuff to play during Christmas, but it's not a Christmas movie, but it is. So he's undercover, Martin Riggs, played by Mel Gibson, and he goes to buy drugs. He's undercover. He's going to buy cocaine. And he goes to this, like, it's a Christmas. These guys are selling out of this Christmas tree lot. And the guy goes, you know, how much for all this? He does a sample. He goes, how much for this? And he goes, oh, it's 80. And he's like, oh, okay. And he starts pulling out his wallet. He's like, oh, 20, 40. But he just realizes it's like, oh, it's like 10 times that amount, you know, or whatever. Right. He gets the numbers wrong. So I felt this the same way. I was like, oh, I feel like a fucking idiot. I'm pulling out my wallet and like going through it. And then obviously it ends in gunfire and fun at the beginning.
Gunfire and fun.
Yeah, I love Lethal Weapon. Didn't affect me at all watching that at VHS constantly. good, great fight. I know he's in trouble now for shenanigans. Gary Busey. Gary Busey is a menace in that movie. He is a fucking psych. I mean, real life he's a psycho, but he's a psychopath in Lethal Weapon. Yep. He is scary.
Busey is just. He recently just got arrested for something, and it was strange.
Yeah, he got in trouble for like it was like some sort of sexual harassment of like attendees at like an expo or something. That's what he was in the news for, or something like that.
Gary Busey pulls pants down in public after sex crimes charges. That is 22 here. That's 22 hours ago.
Okay, Jesus, that's okay. I didn't keep up with that. But check out Lethal Weapon. It's the pinnacle of the buddy cop movie. It perfected it.
Sure.
And the hand to hand combat in that movie, particularly the last scene between Riggs and Gary Busey's character. For 87, the choreography is pretty fucking good. They're like grappling a little bit. They're doing like trying to do like submissions and stuff on each other. It's pretty rough and tumble. And for an 80s movie, the fighting is pretty damn good for a movie like that. And Gibson can scrap. You know, he was in really good shape in those movies there. Great movie. Danny Glover, fucking go see. And of course, the great Richard Donner directed those movies, of course. Rest in peace, Dick Donner.
Dick Donner.
Such, yeah. What was I talking about? Oh, Embracer Group just bought up everything.
I mean, that's not news. But they continue. And well, yes, they continue to steamroll over everything and own everything. Embracer Group acquires Limited Run Games. And they also acquired the Lord of the Rings rights recently as well, which
I don't know sure how that works because Amazon's doing the show, but I guess that means maybe that like the Lord of the Rings, like I don't know, for future stuff, but that means they can do stuff based on Lord of the Rings. That's amazing. That,
yeah.
How much was it worth? It's funny that I never really heard of Embracer Group until the past year, and now they're just coming up everywhere. What's your initial thoughts on this acquisition here?
I am happy to know that the employees have been taken care of. I heard that. I heard, you know, Limited Run throughout the whole thing was, you know, extremely open and transparent. So that's great to know. I feel like Limited Run was at a point where a buyout was absolutely possible. They grew hugely over the past few years. I have no idea what that will really mean for Limited Run going forward. I don't know that it's going to change a whole lot. The only thing that I could see potentially happening, which would be odd because, you know, the name is Limited Run Games, I could see there being a lot, I could see production increasing in certain areas. You know, they got into stores with the Best Buy stuff they were doing for a while. I think they still are, where certain games got like, you know, a retail release in Best Buy. But I wonder if this means you'll see Limited Run products in more locations. I think, you know, in terms of what will be noticeable up front, I think it'll be a wider availability of Limited Run products. That's what I would have to guess.
Well, obviously Embracer would want to push their stuff if they had, sure. But Embracer Games, it sounds like they're buying up all the studios. We can get into that. A lot of stuff probably is AAA, so there's physical games anyway, but obviously if it's an Embracer game, there's going to be probably a Limited Run version, you know,
right.
Like that's, but for the most part though, it looks like it's going to be run independently still. So that's the good news, but this also includes the purchase of their physical store, which I think is interesting. So this is everything that's Limited Run. So that's what's interesting about this deal is that this big old company, that's why it does behoove them to let Limited Run independently operate still, because they've been successful. And plus, right. It's almost like this company is so huge. It's like almost like, well, to them, it's not worth meddling as long as it's profitable. You know what I mean?
Right, right. So yeah, more of a hands-off approach.
Yeah, I haven't been able to talk to Josh since the acquisition. Obviously, we've known those folks. I've known Josh since almost the beginning of Limited Run. Talked to him, done calls with him, and it's interesting to see. It's only been 7 years.
I know. That's the crazy thing. Like, it feels like so much longer, but I mean, we had been doing the podcast for a little while before that was like
just 2 years
that we brought up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We brought up at Portland.
Kind of crazy.
When they were doing their PSP, Vita or PSP game?
Vita.
It was Vita. And then I remember I had a, we were using Skype still. That's how old it was. I did a Skype call with both of them just to, you know, inquire about how the business was running and things. And it was an interesting call. And it sort of helped inform me on some of the challenges they faced.
Holy shit, Skype.
Yeah, so I mean, so Skype, does anyone use Skype anymore? Like anyone? That buggy ass, you turn that program on, your computer grinds to a halt.
Yeah, it does. It's awful. Miserable.
I've probably turned that Skype on 4 or 5 years at least. Anyway, so I'm really happy for all of them out there. They get a lot of heat from obviously people in the community. including people that run their own versions, a small version, limited run. I had to like kind of put one in their place at a convention where they're like, they were like bitching about limited run, like not to me directly at another table. And I was like, I'm friends with, you know, I said, I'm friends with Josh and people there. So I'm just let you know. I said, I try to say nice. I said, you guys wouldn't be doing what you're doing if it wasn't for limited run, taking the huge risk they took in order to do this in the first place.
Sure. I understand a lot of people's initial issues with them. And I certainly was, you know, I had issues with the very limited nature of, you know, their initial runs of stuff, like when it was Vita. But I think a lot of people still hold on to that grudge because I you know, despite the name, you know, a month-long pre-order window is, it's generous. It's, you know, it's, they get the physical copies out there. They help developers. You know, it's a net good. And, you know, I've said this before, no one likes anything limited, but it's because it's being talked about as limited that people get worked up. You know, yeah. We talked about it before when Nintendo said they were going to limit the production of the Mario 3D collection. You don't want to ever hear that this stuff is going to be limited, but in reality, nothing ever gets printed into perpetuity. Anyways, everything has a print run or multiple print runs. I don't think it's as big of a deal as people make it out to be anymore.
Yeah. And one of the big things that they're in this press release that they focus on was the Carbon Engine, which is somewhat newer in terms of public space, where it's basically an internal developed proprietary thing that you can convert games from previous platforms to a modern game. And so that's a very interesting technology. And it looks like they did that. They used it. It wasn't, I think, publicly called Carbon Engine yet. They'd use it with Shantae and Rivers City Girl Zero. So it's interesting that that's up front and center why Embracer Group, probably one of the reasons why they wanted to acquire them, besides obviously they're a profitable company that's making money hand over fist. And they have good relationships, obviously, with Disney properties and other groups. But no, it's interesting that they focus in on a Carbon Engine. And if you take it at their face value, remember Embracer Group was talking about preservation months back. They want to get into preservation. So it's a marriage that makes sense. As long as it's operated independently, they don't try to meddle, I think it'll be fine. But like I said, they also got Lord of the Rings rights. They acquired Singtrix. So I'm not familiar with that.
I don't even know what that is.
Singtrix LLC. It's a music gaming pioneer. They did MTV Drumscape in 96. And looks like they've done a bunch of some other stuff. They did that. Lord of the Rings, like you said, and Hobbit Literary Works. Okay. It's directly those books, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. So the literary works. Okay. So they can then do another Lord of the Rings movie if they wanted to. Then they acquired Tuxedo Labs. I've heard the name.
Yeah, me too. But I can't remember exactly why.
It's in the thread here. Maybe it was a Saber, Saber 3 Rams. Trying to see what they came out with here. Founded in 2019 in Sweden, Tuxedo Labs has 16 members. They did Teardown. Have you heard of Teardown before?
No, I haven't. So maybe I'm just wrong.
Okay. So that sounds like a smaller company. And then they got Tripwire Interactive, which is a U.S. developer and publisher as well. It's been around since 2005. Killing Floor, 35 million players. Rising Storm.
Yep, I know Killing Floor.
Over 14 million players. And Maneater, over 16 million players. Are these free-to-play games?
No.
They're not? Okay.
No. No, Maneater was the game where you can play as a shark. That was really popular last year, like the year before. And Killing Floor is kind of like a Call of Duty Zombies. I think it's like one of those like kind of like endless team-based first-person shooters where you just wave-based, where you're fighting waves and waves of enemies.
They acquired a... leads up to this. This Embracer Group is announcing their 11th operating group. This is a huge company. Embracer Free Mode, which focuses on retro/classic/heritage gaming and entertainment. Game development, production, devices, gear, and collectibles. So that's probably one of the reasons they wanted to get limited run. They want to get more into that sort of scene.
Right.
So they're going to marry all this stuff together. All right. And there's more. They acquired like three other places, but okay. I mean, it's came out with a bang all a few days ago on the 17th. They did that. Our pal Howard Scott Warshaw.
Yeah.
Did an interview with IGN. I read through some of it. I didn't read through all of it. It's a nice little article. Howard, it looks like, has another book coming out. We talked about the book that came out. God, was that 2 years ago the book came out?
Yeah, I think it probably was at this point.
About his life. This one is more about time at Atari, called Once Upon Atari. According to this IGN article, written by Rebecca Valentine, it's a cautionary tale of the perils of crunch, the advent of new game design ideas, an industry-shaking crash, and the necessary inevitable movement of game creation from its formative Wild West years to the much larger collaborative efforts we see today. And I guess through, you know, Howard's eyes, you can basically see that happen.
You right.
know, because he was at Atari, you know, at the not the beginning, but almost, just about.
1981 was when he yeah. when he joined, and you know, he said he enjoyed it because it was the technical challenges were much
sure.
were much bigger than they were at Hewlett Packard, and he enjoyed, you know, he enjoyed that. But yeah, I kind of thought he was there in 80. I thought it was a little bit earlier, but 81.
But you still, you know, you still have, you know, this is still when Warner bought it, so it's like this is not the original Atari,
right?
But it's still like, you know, it's pretty loosey goosey to an extent. You have these, most of these games are still like one person working on a game or two. He always did Raiders of the Lost Ark, so he had a relationship with Spielberg to some extent at that point, and he did Yar's Revenge. And so this is going to probably go into more detail about E.T. And this article talks about the awkward conversation where he flew out to talk to Spielberg, which he's brought up in Video Game Years about.
Yeah.
You know, Spielberg basically said, why don't you make something like Pac-Man? And it's like, I have like 5 weeks to do this game. Like, I can't make a Pac-Man game.
Yeah, I always thought it was 6 weeks, but I'm reading the article now and it's five, which hell, makes it even more heroic.
Give him seven or eight, it doesn't matter. Like, it's right. an insane amount of time to put together a, you know, a functional game. You yeah. may not like it, but it's a functional game that, you know, he didn't do 100% of it. He didn't do, you know, the art and all the sound, but just to do the programming, this was not just like taking a pre-existing game and just, you know, putting graphics over it, which looking back probably would have been a much more successful game if they just found another game and just put ET graphics on top. You know, it probably would have worked out better. I check out the article. Does this article say when the book is coming out? I'm gonna look that up. Once Upon Atari, How I Made History by Killing an Industry. Oh, it's out now. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Oh, wait. That is the same book. Why did you say it's a new book? That's the one we talked about before. Back, it came out in 2020, end of 2020. Why does this article make it seem like there's another book coming out? I mean, they just talked to him about it finally. Okay. That's
maybe. The world's been kind of weird, I guess.
Yeah. It was posted August 17th and updated. Okay. Well, then check out the book that we talked about before. I thought there was a second book.
It's fine. We like to talk about Howard.
I like to talk about Howard. It's nice to talk to a guy who's helping out people. Really nice dude. He takes it in stride when people say, you know, you helped kill, you know, the video game industry. And, you know, he's very gracious when he comes out to events still like Portland and other ones. I try to.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever met him in person, but he always seems like a swell guy.
Talked to him a few times. I first met him on the set of the AVGN movie, which was holy shit, 10 years ago.
Jesus,
that filming in the desert ish scene was 10 years ago when I still had short hair. That's how I tell time. Quitting my job and the hair. That was both 2012 where it transitioned.
You know where you can't get a haircut, but you can get a lot of other things.
Where, Ian?
UltimateNintendo.com. yeah, you can get not for resale.
Blu-ray. You can get the books. You can get the enamel pins.
Yep.
With my scruffy hair on and Ian's scruffy hair and beard on one of them and just my hair on the other. RBI baseball stickers out the wazoo. They're popular with the kids, the RBI baseball stickers. Absolutely. They sell every week. They sell out at the conventions usually. And t-shirts, limited t-shirt, we're blowing out. If you're size small, well, we got the shirt for you. The limited shirt, it's only $10 size
small. If you're a small framed fan, now is the time for you to shine.
You got a medium sized
brand new t-shirt.
Medium sized dog. Cut out, make it a sweater
medium
for the pooch.
Because
a large sized dog, it probably won't fit in that shirt, but it could at ultimatenintendo.com. I'll be on Twitch every Wednesday. It's one of the highlights of my week, to be honest. It's actually like kind of distresses me from Tuesdays. It's twitch.tv/ContraCone, watching 70s, 80s, 90s commercials. And then Cameo, if you want a Cameo shout out, cameo.com/Pat. Contrary. Speaking of shears, Ian, you still have my mini scissors. Thank God. We never told the whole story. I was freaking out packing up because I had the scissors. I have these scissors that
the
I got.
The perfect pair. The perfect pair of scissors for cutting those labels.
And for beards and for eyebrows, because they're not sharp edges. They're blunt edges. So, right. Like, because you can buy. I went to the dollar store again. I got that at the dollar. That was part, Ian, of a two-pack. I found it on Amazon. That was part of a two-pack beard grooming set that I found at the dollar store, where you got the brush, you got a little brush, and you got the shears, right? So I said, mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's perfect for eyebrows. I need it for my eyebrows. My eyebrows grow like wild, like weeds. You think my hair grows like weeds? The eyebrows, I got to trim them every week, you know? So, but they're also the perfect size for cutting RBI baseball stickers. And if I leave them in my backpack by accident, or as Ian did, TSA did not catch those scissors because he didn't know he was carrying them. They're not sharp anyway, because you can buy mini scissors, but they're super sharp usually, the little mini ones. They're super sharp. I don't want that around my eyes. I don't. No. So yeah, I was freaking out. I lost them. I must have dropped them, and you said in your bag, but you got them back for me. So I need those bit back, damn it. Those are like essential. I might buy a backup pair. But that's one of the reasons I went to the dollar store, Ian, was to try to find a replacement pair, see if they had it. But no, they had a three-pack set. If you want to get stuff for taking care of yourself, they had a three-pack. Nail clipper, tweezer, and little mini scissors for $1.25. Can't go wrong. You can't go wrong. I almost feel like wholesaling from dollar store and selling on my website, ultimatetunnel.com, and selling those things.
drop ship scissors.
I mean, because that stuff you on Amazon, that stuff's like $7-$8 to get that same sort of stuff, and it's $1.25. And it was a real brand. I forget the brand name, but I was happy and I bought that. But I did not find the exact set that you have. I did not. You know what makes me happy, Ian? Gimmick.
Gimmick does. Gimmick makes you happy.
Gimmick makes me happy. Where is the Gimmick plush toy? I am 8-bit. I told you that 3 years ago when you started selling the soundtrack. I said plush would sell like wildfire.
It would.
Licensed Gimmick plush. Because it's a fucking plush. It's a toy plush. You make a plush.
He's a toy.
It's a toy. Come
you
on.
Do it. It makes sense.
So there's a Sunsoft event, Ian. We'll use that. Very lightly, the word event.
Yeah, there was an event. It was a lean and mean 8 minutes.
The same way my lunch every day is an event.
Right. But hey, Sunsoft is back and we're happy. We're happy for them.
Did they ever go away?
I'm not sure that they ever really did. This is just, you know, kind of like, hey, we're still here. And they announced a few games. One of them is a re-release of Mr. Gimmick. Probably at this point, it wasn't always their best known property, but at this point, it's probably their most famous. It's gotten pretty damn popular.
Batman's
over
the probably
years.
Still their, you know, Batman or probably the Super Nintendo games, maybe. But people don't realize that, like, something like Death Valley Rally is probably a Sunsoft. But, all right. It's good.
So they are bringing back Gimmick. It's getting release on, I think it's the Switch, PlayStation, Microsoft, PC, everything. And they are also announcing Euphoria is getting a release as well. Both of those were released in Sweden?
Scandinavia area, yeah.
Scandinavia area, but never made it over here. So it's the
regular game with a bunch of extra features. Well, obviously there's some emulation features, there's like the rewind stuff, there's a speed mode, there's a normal mode. You can rewind and go forward. So let me tell you, Gimmick's a tough game, especially if you're going to get all the, each stage has its own, special secret item that if you do not get it, you cannot possibly get the good ending to the game. You get the melancholy ending. So there's actually, you know, multiple endings for an NES game is pretty rare. There's not a lot where that actually happened. So that was a cool thing. And I, to this day, there's the one secret item I forget. I don't think it's the last one. I think it's the second to last secret item I never was able to get. on actual hardware without, like, you know, save stating it 1,000 times. There's one, the first few are gettable for me fairly easily, but then there's a couple that are tough on that. And it's an incredible game. It's great. Let's talk about this presentation. It's a VTuber presentation.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the rage. Little weird. It says it's a person that's running the Twitter account. Who knows? And the person behind Sunsoft and a Twitter account, Sunsoft Games. And then, so there's Euphoria is not as well known as Gimmick, but it's the same sort of graphics style. You have cute sort of like animal, like little puppy characters. That one's, there's like different items and stuff as well. And then there's a third game they put on here, Ian, that I have not heard of.
Inky Unite. So now that I've read about it more, I do recall it. The original is known to be like one of the worst games on the Famicom. It was kind of, this game's press article says it, that it was notorious for coining the worm, the term kusoge or crap game.
Okay.
But now Inky Unite is supposed to basically realize the developer's original vision. And it's a multiplayer co-op roguelike in that players team up in large or small groups to battle a feudal overlord. That actually sounds really interesting to me, and I definitely want to check that out.
And it has more of a modern graphic style.
Yes, like. Yeah, this is more of like a modern game, whereas sure. Gimmick and Euphoria, as far as I can tell, are basically just getting...
They're NES games.
They're direct ports with additional stuff.
Someone had surmised that maybe... by the way, we talk about the where's the captions on this? They're going to do a vinyl and cassette of the music for Mission
Ship to Shore is doing that. I'm really, really, really looking forward to it. They're using the same artist that they used for the Mega Man Legends vinyl. It's going to look awesome.
I don't usually collect this stuff. I think the cassette looks adorable and gimmick. We'll call it Gimmick Green. If you see that, it's about 6 minutes into it. That's and the soundtrack is obviously amazing. So if you want to just get it to listen to,
yeah.
And so I don't know much about Euphoria's music. I'm not as familiar with the game. If that's getting, if it's that'd be worth it. No soundtrack there. Can we do a plush? Can we do a plush, please? Please, give me plush. I'd be sitting behind me forever. I'd be cuddling with it. I mean, honestly, you can do there. I mean, all the characters are all the enemies are toys. All the main enemies, all the bosses, and one of the sub bosses. So you could do those as well. So all right, well, here's the Sunsoft doing something. Some people were surmising that the arcade release was going to be, they're going to do something with that as well.
I would like to see it, but I feel like now I can't even remember what the hell that system is called. It's right on the tip of my tongue. I feel like those probably have locked up exclusivity deals because they're expensive to buy the boards for, and you can't make like an expensive board and then immediately release the game because the people XXA Arcadia or whatever.
Yeah, because that's still technically, I guess, a new product. That's only been out. It's only been out. Looks like a couple years.
Right, I mean, if people are just getting them, and these are like, I think they're like $2,000, $3,000 boards.
$1,200.
Going to release that. Yeah,
$1,200. $1,216. According to
that's cheaper than it was when I first checked. So that's good.
So I mean, like, yeah, I can sort of see that. I would love to see this somewhere, like a Japanese arcade or a round one. By the way, we're getting a round one in San Diego. There's one in development. I'm so excited, Ian.
Oh, nice.
National City's going to have one. I guess, is there a mall in National City? I just, as an aside, I think that's
amazing. Yeah, I think there
well,
is.
Well, I'll let you get another pack of Starbucks because I kept my card and did not, I'm guessing the points work at every round one. It would make sense, like a Dave and Buster's. If you've never been to a round one, imagine a Dave and Buster's, but enjoyable and has stuff you actually want to play. Like that's a round one.
Yeah, the pinball is expensive and not well maintained, but
okay. Besides
it's neat.
The other 98% of the place, the best redemption games. They have good arcade games. They have all the top end stuff there. Love that Konami Marble game.
I do want to go back to one just because I really want to play that weird Pac-Man pinball looking game that was out of order when we were there. Unfortunately,
yeah, right up front. Hasbro plans to make a lot more video games. They own the rights to, obviously, Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, Transformers, and G.I. Joe, which doesn't even get a mention in the front of this article, which shows you how much G.I. Joe has fallen in stature. It doesn't get a fucking mention. D&D gets a mention, but not G.I. Joe in this article? Okay.
D&D is the fucking hot shit right now, man.
Should have been me. So, I mean, they came out with the G.I. Joe game last year that no one cared about, the third-person shooter game. Didn't look terrible. I had zero interest.
Wasn't it like a Battle Royale type game or something like that?
No, there was missions. There was single-player missions, I believe. But it looked just like, okay, this is okay. There was like, I think, four or five different Joes you can be, I believe. But if I'm looking at it, I'm like, I don't want to do it. You know, there's an arcade G.I. Joe game no one ever talks about, right? It's pretty damn good. Can someone re-release that? That's like it's never been released anywhere. Can we get that somewhere, please? You almost never see the arcade game. It's great. Third-person shooter. Early third-person
shooter. Okay, yeah. I was about to be like, I think I've actually played this before.
It's amazing. It's really fun. It has scaling graphics.
Yeah.
There's four players on it. I think it says Duke, Rock and Roll, Scarlet, and Snake Eyes, I believe, are the four. I don't know why Rock and Roll gets all the... I mean, they try to pump up Rock and Roll. No one ever cared about Rock and Roll, but whatever. He was an original figure, and they re-released him a couple times. Anyway. Was it Rock and Roll? So they're trying to. Okay, they're going to do six video game studios and working on many unannounced projects. There's an unnamed studio. Why is it unnamed? I guess it's a secret still. And there's one in Eastgate, Washington, led by ex Bungie developer Leia Hoyer. Okay, they're going to come out with stuff. That's the bottom line. They're going to. They have the rights to. I remember, they have all the board games. They have Scrabble.
Yeah,
Baldur's Gate. They got. I don't know. I'm not going to get my hopes up for a good G.I. Joe game. But honestly, you re-release the freaking do a re-release pack of the Commodore 64 game that I remember playing at. Remember that game? That was a decent game. Come out with the fucking Atari game that was crap. Come out with the decent Commodore game with different play modes. Come out with the arcade game. Come out with the two NES games. There was no G.I. Joe games in the 16-bit era, really. I'm trying to think. Like, my God. I mean, it was dead by the early to mid-90s. It was pretty
There's
much
none. There's none.
There's none.
I'm looking at the Apple II game, which is probably the same
thing.
The
It was a fun game. It was actually a fun game. For what, there was like different
Epic, too.
Yeah. No, I own it. I own that in the box. I think it's somewhat tough to find in the box. I mean, because no one bought it. Yeah. Just come out with those games, and I'll be happy, Hasbro. Come out with that. Gamer Rage is real. You just saw it. I was complaining about G.I. Joe stuff. So this article is from Eric Griffith of good old PC Mag. Good old PC Mag. It's been around forever.
So there's a handy infographic at the top here.
What do I like an infographic?
How often do you feel extreme anger while gaming? And across the top, going to the right, you have Xbox, PlayStation, PC, Switch, and phone tablet. And then going down, you have rarely, once per week, daily, or more. And if you just look at the daily or more, this doesn't strike me as a surprise. The Xbox had a response of 21.3% of gamers felt angry about video games every day.
Extreme anger.
Extreme anger.
I wonder every how day. That's qualified. Like, do you what is extreme anger? Like, do you like want to hurt someone? Like,
right.
So
no idea.
So if you know anything about statistics, there's something called significant difference. And I have to see what the sample size were and run the ANOVA, but 21 versus 12 percent would seem to be significant. That's what PlayStation is, 12.4%. PC is only 14% in that range. Switch is 10.5%. We're more well balanced on the Switch. You know, you're playing Animal Crossing, you're not going to get pissed off. And then the phone or tablet, this tracks 8%, because you're on a phone or tablet, you're relaxing. You don't want to get extreme anger when you're on the crapper. You know, that's not what you want to do when you're playing your games on there or just watching TV. They're more laid back, you know, the quote unquote casual game. So what is it about Xbox versus Sony where the difference is? Is that a meme, or is that like, what is that, you think?
I honestly just feel like it's you know, kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, in the 360 era, it was known for being the hardcore system that you played your online shooters on. And I think that kind of held over, you know, in the Xbox One era. So I feel like that the people who gravitate towards an Xbox and are playing online are probably, I don't know, playing more for keeps, I guess. You know, they take it more seriously.
Sure.
I think it's less on the PlayStation, because I think the PlayStation probably has a larger like a broader user base, so maybe you don't get quite as much concentration of people who take their games really seriously.
It's 1,045 gamers.
Switch is, I think it's right. I think you're right with Switch in terms of the extreme anger, because a lot of the games that you play on the Switch are not, you know, there's fast-paced competitive games on the Switch, but a lot of them are, you know, a bit slower, a bit more adventure-y, a bit more take this at your own speed.
Adventure-y. This is the population here. 1,045 U.S. gamers, average age of 28.6, who game a minimum of 4 hours per week. The average was 15 hours. 15, okay, so like a couple hours a day. I found that the game franchise that angers them the most is Call of Duty, 23.5%.
Okay, so, yeah, without even reading this, that's exactly what I was thinking. I feel like a lot of the people who play Call of Duty a lot, that's more likely to be an Xbox player. And here we are, Call of Duty is the game that's causing the most anger.
What drives people to such destructive extremes? The survey asked whether people had broken things while in a game rage, and almost one in five said yes. We are an angry, sad population, if that's true. 20% of people are breaking stuff when the average age is 28 years old. The object most broken is the controller or keyboard / mouse, of course, at a whopping 73%. So I'm sorry for your controller or mouse. Don't stand near a wall if you're a local gamer, as irate. The next broken, even ahead of a TV monitor, 6.6%, is the household drywall at nearly 16%.
Jesus.
And 25.5% have lashed out at loved ones when in a rage.
Probably. You ever know those rage heads? I was friends with one. He was one of my closest friends growing up. I knew him from like the time I was five until, you know, we kind of fell out and lost touch. Never had like a falling out, but we lost touch probably about 5 years ago. And he was one of those dudes who would just get fucking pissed about shit and put a hole in the wall. And it's like, no one thinks you're fucking tough, man.
I did that when I was 15 and lashing out.
Right.
Yeah, in puberty, you know, because I was pissed. But once you become an adult, no. No, you shouldn't be hitting walls with things.
Adults who punch walls, not a cool thing.
No, wow. When I hear that and I see these, this could be a whole main topic if we wanted to. When I see once per week, across the board, at least once per week, if you combine them, if you're an Xbox gamer, at least once per week or daily, you combine the both pat math. That's like 60%. 60% of an Xbox gamer is extremely angry while gaming at least once per week. That is nuts to me when I see that. Extreme anger once a week you are experiencing because of a video game console.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing to me. I say it a lot, and I'm not trying to like rub it in people's face, but games make me happy. I play video games because I need an escape from bullshit. If video games made me extremely angry, I would simply not play them.
Yeah. Like even the Switch though on here, you have once per week, 43%. That seems high to me. I guess what you lose a Mario Kart, you get super pissed off. But like there's a difference between getting upset, angry, extreme anger. I need to see the actual how they define extreme anger. Like what is like how is that actually defined in the study?
Yeah.
But that's insane to me. So what makes you extremely angry when gaming? 60.7% repeatedly losing at the same level. 43% other player using hacks, cheats. I get that. I would stop playing a game if there's too many cheaters. But maybe pay the money for the game.
Sure, but I mean cheaters and stuff like that, that's on someone else. That's not on you.
This next one, I don't believe that 43% says they're extremely angry at game bugs. At game bugs? Like besides like, you know, Cyberpunk, what games coming out have those extreme bugs that like break the game that badly? But okay, 40% griefers and 22% campers. So obviously when you see campers, that's a lot of obviously first person shooters,
first person stuff.
Obviously with hacks and cheats, that's going to be a lot of first person shooters as well, or third person shooter. I don't know if there's a lot of cheaters in like stuff like Fortnite, or they have that stamped out. I have no idea. And then what games or franchise causes you the most anger? Call of Duty, 23.5%. Mario Kart, 22%. Wow. I thought that's a chill, laid-back game. When I lose a race, I'm not happy, but I was like, okay, I lost a race. It's still a fun game. Minecraft, 21%. Minecraft? Really? League of Legends, 20%. Smash Brothers Ultimate, about 20%.
Sure.
And then GTA, 19%. So there's your game. So if you're angry playing the Switch, it's most likely Mario Kart or Smash.
I mean, Mario Kart has got some fucking bullshit, but I mean, the bullshit is also, again, like I said, part of why I play it. I mean, I go, God damn, or fuck, or, you know, but I'm not, like,
that's part of the experience.
Mad.
You're going to lose it.
I'm not mad.
You're going to be wiped out within seconds of winning a race. Like, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. That's part of it, but you're going to wipe someone else out. I've wiped people out within, you know, and come from behind victory. Like, that's part of the experience. Yep. That's why it's not a straight racing game. It's a party racing game.
When you play it as a straight racing game, you realize how badly it's broken as a straight racing game.
Exactly. It's the same way I don't want to play Smash Bros. Without items. Then play Street Fighter 2. Like,
right.
That's
sure.
You're taking the fun out of it. It's goofy. Sony's being sued for $5 billion.
Jesus, Sony. Sony, Sony, Sony. Sony.
Is it justified?
Yeah, so they're being sued $5 billion.
This is from $5 billion
pounds.
Pounds.
So this is by Ryan Dinsdale, coming from IGN. Sony is being sued for $5.9 billion U.S. dollars.
Hey, we caught up. The dollars caught up.
Huh?
The dollars caught up over the years. Yeah.
Jeez. Over the price of its online PlayStation Store prices, with the plaintiff claiming Sony is overcharging consumers and abusing its position as the primary seller of PlayStation games digitally. So this is basically about, you know, how Sony controls the market within their online store, because there is no choice. You can't shop around. It's not like going out and buying a physical game where you can be like, well, see if Target's got it, or maybe GameStop's got it used or something like that. This is about them controlling the prices and keeping games that, you know, even maybe brand new in stores at $19.99, because they've been out for a while, they'll often still charge, you know, $60. They'll charge the full price for the game. You know, on the online store, where they've got you, as a captive audience.
This was filed by consumer rights advocate Alex Neal, the ex-managing director of a nonprofit consumer advice organization, which is leading the legal action. It says the game is up for Sony PlayStation. Filed with the Competition Appeal Tribunal. Man, everything sounds fancier over there versus here. We don't have an appeal tribunal over here. They don't have any tribunals, I think. States that consumers have been overcharged for digital purchases of games and DLC, as Sony is charging a 30% commission. So the argument is that, like, if you're a company, you're forced to charge more to make up that commission. And there is something to be said for that. We talked about how, like, you know, Microsoft's been lowering it because Epic Games originally lowered it. 30% was established by Apple, way back in the day. And I guess Microsoft did something similar in the Xbox store. And it's just an arbitrary number, 30%. Me personally, I think that's way too much.
Yeah, I think that's insane.
If you told me, hey, Pat, 15-20%, okay, that's fine. And so obviously, in people and in organizations, the fact that they're lowering it means that, okay, we're obviously making a good profit margin still. It's just that 30% is just arbitrary and existed. So this is similar to, like, I think Apple was taken to court over this as well, because Apple sells the devices like Sony sells the consoles, but then they also run the store, and they're the only game in town to buy. If you're going to buy a Sony digital, you know, game, you're most likely to buy it at a Sony store.
Right.
That's what's in front of you. And they set the prices. There's not really competition. That's the argument. We'll see what happens. Obviously, if they broke that, that would be big news. Big news. The quote here, we believe Sony has abused its position and ripped off its customers. I don't know. We'll see how far this gets.
Yeah, I honestly don't think it's going to get very far. But it's still interesting to see it brought up.
And the value comes from the estimated damages per individual over the last 6 years, since it's been out the console, I guess that's where it's coming from, range from around $79 to $664, excluding interest. So I think that's, like, that's the argument as well. If Sony's more competitive, and, you know, and games would be cheaper if they weren't taking a big of a cut, this is how much more consumers are spending because they have a monopoly.
Right.
So, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, I'm interested. Obviously, this stuff, it seems like consumer protection seems to be somewhat stronger in Europe.
Yeah, people can definitely tell us if we're wrong on that. But that's always been my kind of take on it, is that at least superficially at the very least, it looks stronger.
Sure. Ian, what's going on with your Sega over here with these with the movies? What is this? What's happening here, buddy?
What is this? So Sega has said that they would like to start doing more movies, more video game movies.
Sure.
And they have announced that they are doing a Comics Zone and Space Channel 5 movie. We'll see if we ever get these. Space Channel 5, I think, actually has an interesting enough setting and story. I mean, the game's about pirate radio stations in space and an alien invasion. And I think you could actually probably, if it's stylish enough,
could actually probably, yes.
Yeah. I think it would, you know, be something that could be fun. Comic Zone is, I have no idea why they're dragging up Comic Zone. I mean, an interesting action game from the Genesis that really wasn't great, about a guy with a very 90s long, slim blonde ponytail and sunglasses fighting his way through comics. We have so many fucking like superhero movies that I think what about a generic guy in a, I just seems like a bad idea. Seems like a bad idea.
They're sucked into the age of their comics. That's such a trope that was done on the Noctropolis back in the day.
Yeah.
These movies are not happening. No. If you told me, okay, maybe we'll do like a Space Channel 5, like a little animated thing, little short film. I mean, okay, that's a cool idea. No one knows, no one knows these properties by and large. Like, no one knows these. Like, these like the reason they're called obscure is because they are. So, I mean, like, these will not be movies that you will see. I will bet money on you will not see these movies made.
Well, I mean, this has been the case for so many things that we've talked about over the years. Is
the Pong movie, Tetris movie,
Tetris movie? Yeah, all these movies. People are like, yeah, it's absolutely in the works. No, it's fucking not. No, it's not. I do think Space Channel 5 on the surface would be interesting enough for one, but it's not going to get made.
That's a dancing game, isn't it?
Like I said, there's a story and a world to it, though. I mean, they fleshed it out pretty good.
Okay, it's interesting enough.
I'm saying you could. I have no idea how you would make a Comic Zone movie. I have no idea how you would make a Tetris movie. I have no idea how you. Would
Well,
make
a Comic Zone
movie.
Movies. You know, you beat up thugs. You sure. know, in the comic, like that's that you can make a movie about. It just would be a very generic, like boring ass movie. Like that's basically it.
Yeah. So
do your Streets of Rage movie instead.
We're never going to see these.
Are they doing a Streets of Rage movie? Did they talk about that?
No.
Wouldn't that make more sense?
Yeah.
When you're talking about popular Sega franchises, I mean, that would be top 5 or 6, right? Wouldn't that make more sense? 6 or 7?
Yeah, I would think so. I think that would make more sense. Sure.
Or you can just watch Streets of Fire to get both Final Fight and Streets of Rage all in one.
Get it all in one.
Have you seen that yet, by the way?
No, I haven't.
Damn it, Ian. It might not be on Netflix anymore. You have to see that movie. It's such a weird-ass, interesting movie. Is it on Netflix? I think it's still on Netflix. It is. It was as of last year. So you get in early, Ian. Get in early.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ian, we have an announcement about the Genesis Mini 2 game selection, the 60 titles that will be available on this second mini. The first one came out now, 2 years ago already? The first one came out and it got positive reviews. It was $80. And it had, did it have 60 titles? Yeah, I believe it had 60 titles, the first one.
50, I think. I've 50. Got it. It was nicely made, really, really interesting titles. I enjoyed it. For a mini system, I thought it was great. I don't own the PC Engine one. I just I don't really need it. But the Genesis Mini, I think, impressed me because there was some choice cuts on
it. It wasn't the fucking cheap ass at games
one. Right. Sure.
Emulation by, you said, by M2. They work on.
I believe some of the porting was done by M2.
Okay. Yes. So we'll just say it was the best quality Genesis Mini that ever came out, and there's been like a handful of them over the years.
Yeah.
Definitely
the best of them. So this was announced, and initially there was only like 10 games announced. They said that they would be adding some Sega CD games. That got people excited, but they did not announce like nearly anything. So now they've got the full list, and I've seen a lot of people who are disappointed by it. I think it's actually a pretty cool list.
Let's go through the video in order, because that'd be more, because I can see then the games as we go through. Click on the video if you want to do that.
Sure.
And like you said before, you corrected me that these are 60 original games. These are not on the first one. So that's
no, there are no. There are no repeats.
Super Hang On. So surprised it wasn't on the first one, because that's one of those earlier titles that they really like a launch title, just about game, right, or close to it. I'm kind of surprised that wasn't on the original. Yeah, 89. So I mean, I don't have a lot of, I mean, if you had a Genesis back when we're talking pre Sonic Genesis, the first like year and a half, this was a game that a lot of people had because this was an arcade title.
Sure.
So
Truxton, great shooter. Very difficult, very expensive. Phantasy Star 2 is you know, a
earlier
classic.
Title, 90.
Herzog Zwei, one of the first, you know, one of the earliest examples of like a real-time strategy game.
Genesis. And it's a space game, and it goes for a ton of money. What does it go for? $100, $150, something like that.
Yeah,
it was always one of those coveted ones. So that's interesting. So you're already seeing that. Okay, we're going for some interesting stuff. Afterburner 2, another earlier title, that pre-Sonic title. You know, it's Afterburner. It's fine. Rainbow Islands Extra, a version. I have no idea about this game. Obviously, Rainbow Islands, I do. But what's this Extra?
I mean, a lot of games in Japan get extra or special tags when they're ported to different systems.
Okay.
So I don't know what makes it extra. I've never played the Genesis version of that. I would love to play it. I love the original.
It looks like the arcade version when I'm looking at the graphics. Obviously, the NES version is different. This looks to be, well, at least anyone in North America is different. Revenge of Shinobi, another one that I could have sworn this was on the original. I guess it was.
Love Revenge of Shinobi. The original had Shinobi 3 on it. I like Revenge a little bit more.
Revenge,
so I'm happy to see that.
The second one?
Yeah.
Okay. So surprising they would go 3 then 2. I don't know much about the differences.
Three is just generally more popular, I think. That's why.
Hellfire.
Amazing, amazing shooter. I have it on the PC Engine. The Genesis version is great because the controller works better for it because each button is a different shot type.
Oh, nice. Granada.
Granada is also awesome. That's
top-down shooter.
I'm
not familiar with that one. That looks more like an older arcade game that was ported, but I mean, it wasn't, but it looks like it, just how the style is.
Granada, I believe, was an arcade game, and it is, maybe not, but it was definitely older.
Populous. I don't know how popular that was in the Genesis. I believe I own it. That was one of those EA releases, I think, that has the thicker book in it, so it's a thicker one. And then another Shinobi, Shadow Dancers. Is that the fourth one?
Dancer is a extraordinarily non-accurate port of an arcade game. There is a Shadow Dancer arcade game. Okay. I love Shadow Dancer. I don't know where it came in terms of like the
lore. You know. It's an offshoot, maybe spinoff. Yeah.
But it's awesome. I fucking love Shadow Dancer. It's a great game.
A game that we brought up before that's interesting, Game Ground.
I love Game Ground. Game Ground is so much fun. It's not well known. It's a very weird game, but I love it. It looks like a gauntlet, but it's so much more strategic.
Yeah,
Midnight Resistance is a neat one. That's a run and gun. And then,
let me look at this one before. Midnight Resistance. I had not heard of this one. Is that an uncommon game?
Yes, somewhat uncommon.
The flamethrower. It looks like the Bloody Wolf sort of flamethrower, but. Obviously, TurboGrafx does it better, which is kind of amazing when I look at it. It looks crappy compared to TurboGrafx flamethrower. It's a running gun shooter, side scroller. Shining in the Darkness. Not familiar.
First person dungeon crawler. A lot of fun.
Cute graphics. Okay. What's next here? By the way, I love this video they put out because it gives you a description of the game with gameplay as you go through it. And this is great.
Yeah.
Outrun. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We finally get like an arcade, a good port of Outrun. Thank you.
The Genesis version of Outrun is not great.
It's not that good? Really?
It's fine. The Genesis does not do the super scalar stuff great. I mean, it was fine for the time, but now there's way better versions to play.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, talking about either Master System or PC Engine, you have a lot of choices back then.
Bonanza Brothers, Rolling Thunder 2.
Well, let's glance over Bonanza Brothers here for a second. That's a goofy ass game that's not really talked about that much. Is that two simultaneous players, just like Xenophobe and yes. Spy versus Spy?
Yep.
And so, okay, I'm impressed that they're getting some, I know they went through 60 originally, and a lot of these are, you know, for some of these are first party titles, but I do like the fact that some of these are kind of interesting, weird games.
Yeah.
What's the next one?
Rolling Thunder 2.
Okay. I'm in. I'm fucking in. Rolling Thunder 2 and 3. Only systems that came out from the time was a Genesis. Obviously I'm a Rolling Thunder fanboy and, and they're simultaneous. I'm in. Golden Axe 2. Not really familiar with this versus the first game. I don't remember playing it in the arcade. I remember seeing it, but at that point, I was like, oh, I already played Golden Axe. I mean, do you like the sequel?
Yeah, I like the Golden Axe games in general.
You can't go wrong with Golden Axe. What's next here?
Desert Strike. Those are games that were really popular when I was younger. I didn't play them until kind of recently. They're great games.
I think Mike Kevin had that one. That one I think I played. He had that. For Genesis. War Song. That's a hard to find one, right?
Yes, and I believe War Song is, I think the Japanese name for it is Langrisser, which is obviously over there it was more popular. It's a series of strategy RPGs, but I believe War Song is one of those.
It's like and, a Might and Magic
great
Might and Magic style sort of game.
Yeah. It's got great looking little sprite graphics.
It's cute.
More like a Shining Force or a Advance Wars type of game, I think.
Atomic Runner, not familiar.
Atomic Runner, Chelmov. This game is extremely difficult and weird to play.
It's
essentially a scrolling shooter, but you're the Atomic Runner, and he can do like really high flips and stuff like that. It's a lot going on, it's fun.
Platforming scrolling shooter.
Yeah,
that's interesting. There's not many games like that because even Elite Dragoon is not auto scrolling. You go at your own pace. Interesting.
Right, exactly.
Interesting. I'm kind of Splatterhouse 2. Okay. Hard to find I'll say uncommon. Not really hard to find. Uncommon. Sega CD game Night Trap makes an appearance. Okay. It's cool that it shows up. It's one of the more famous Sega CD games. I mean, there you go.
I think it's there more as a historical footnote than anything. I mean, it's not a game that people are going to spend a lot of time playing. Like I said previously, I like a lot of like Laserdisc and full motion video games. There's a charm to them, but Night Trap just isn't that much fun to play.
Nor is Sewer Shark, which was the packing game originally for the Sega CD.
I would rather play Sewer Shark than I would absolutely rather play Sewer Shark.
You shoot little yellow orange little rat things.
Lightning Force is great. It is part of the Thunder Force series. I think it's technically Thunder Force 4. Awesome shooter.
It is
Thunder Force 4. Okay. Awesome shooter. Very, very brutally difficult, but like just excellent game.
Next we have the Ninja Warriors, which also came out on God, am I confusing that with the NES one? It's not the same one.
No, I believe it's on Super Nintendo as well.
That's right.
But this is the Sega CD version.
It looks like it was an arcade game. I'm not familiar with it.
It was an arcade game.
It's just one plane beat 'em up like Vigilante. Looks interesting, or like Kung Fu. Elemental Master, another shooter.
Yeah. Then this one I don't actually know very well, so. It'll be interesting.
Wow, so far, Ian, there's a lot of shooters for you on here.
There's like four. I think I looked. There's like four or five.
Night Striker.
Night Striker. I always wanted to play this. I've never played this. That game is wild looking.
It's a scalar third-person shooter.
Racing game.
It's racing? You're shooting stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, you're a car.
It calls it a shooter.
I know, but I'm just saying, look at it. It's a, you're a car.
Yeah, but no, but it's not racing because you're, it's not a time limit. That's what I mean. It's a shooter. Okay. The object is to shoot things. You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's what I mean. Final Fight CD. All right. Oh, fucking version. K. The best version of the game that came out back then. They added cutscenes. No bullshit. No, only two characters selectable.
You get all still max out at four, but it's better than what we had.
No, I mean like you get all three characters to play.
Oh, sure, sure.
That's what you're saying. There's only four enemies on screen at the time. Well, that's better than only having three.
It's absolutely. It's it's way better.
So you have, that means you have six people on screen at the same time, and on Super Nintendo at four. It was terrible. Yep. I mean it was awful. Echo the Dolphin. Surprise, that wasn't on the first one. Oh, the Sega CD one. Gotcha. The Sega CD version. Robo Aleste.
Yeah, that's a really good one to have. That's expensive.
I'm not familiar. Another shooter. Yes, I say that. There's like several shooters so far. Burkeem has like seven or eight so far. Ranger X. Not familiar. Another action game, sort of shooter hybrid, it looks like. Interesting. I know that goes for a little bit of money.
Silphide's another shooter. That one's the Sega CD game.
I'm not familiar with that. Vertical scrolling. Oh, that's the one that's sort of, okay, it's like, it's a 3D-esque, like polygon type of graphic.
Yeah, it was big, but it was big. It was a big deal when it came out on computers. I think Sierra published it over here because of how it looked.
Sonic the Hedgehog CD. There you go, Sonic CD. That would make sense, obviously, if you're doing CD games. Toe Jam and Earl, Panic on Funkotron.
So that is the sequel. That is a straight-up platformer. Some people like it. A lot of people don't like it because it changed so much from the original game.
Mansion of Hidden Souls. I have zero... I did not know that was a game. That's a it's a adventure game, a la, like, you know, Myst or Seventh Guest, it looks like. Virtua Racing. That makes sense to have that on there. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people
interesting
like
that it's there wasn't a Sega CD version. Excuse me. Interesting, but yeah.
Fatal Fury 2 makes the cut. Okay. I've never played the Genesis version. I'm sure it's not terrible, but not great.
I don't love Fatal Fury until you get to Special.
Super Street Fighter 2 is on here. I'm not familiar with how good that is. I mean, the Genesis Street Fighter 2 champion is ass. It's like the worst out of all of them. I don't know how New Challengers is. But, I mean, the graphics look actually improved versus the regular Street Fighter Champion. Streets of Rage 3. There you go. You got to have a Streets of Rage on there. Outrunners. There you go.
Now, this is more interesting to me because this was not an arcade game. Yeah.
And that's a racing game that's in the Outrun series. Shining Force 2.
Excellent series.
A tactical RPG.
Basically Fire Emblem, but Sega's version.
The third Echo game, the Tides of Time, the second CD one, Viewpoint, not familiar with this. Zaxxon, perspective shooter.
I believe that was SNK. Sammy's arcade classic. Sammy. Well, you can get it on the MVS. It's a neat game.
The classic Clay Fighter makes
that. That didn't really need to be there.
They probably cheap rights. Rystar, that's a cult classic.
Yeah, great one. Sega made. Nice. Beautiful graphics.
Cute platformer.
Right around the same time as Sonic 3. Really great design.
Shining Force CD, another Shining Force.
Very expensive.
That goes for a lot.
Yeah, so that's a good one. Crusader of Senti, also a few hundred dollars worth of game there in Crusader of Senti. Gorgeous looking, kind of a later release for the Genesis. It's a Zelda clone, but it's a damn good one.
It looks like Link to the Past. Norm did a video on this years back. It's always been one of those ones that went for decent money because it's like the action adventure game to play. I've never heard of the Ooze, but it's on here. It's a top down action game where you're an ooze going around. It looks quirky and interesting. I never heard of it before. Alien Soldier.
Great, great treasure game. Was not released over here. It was European only. Europe and Japan only. This is a big one to get on there.
Big. Earthworm Jim 2. Great graphics, obviously. People are into the series. Sonic 3D Blast. I mean, I guess you got to put another Sonic game on there. Is that the last one that came out in a cart?
Yeah.
Was that before or after 3? I forget, or Sonic and Knuckles. But do you like that one? Are you into it at all?
I like 3D Blast, but I like the Saturn version.
Vector Man 2, That's another sort of one people like. It has a really great animation on there.
Here's the special content, though.
Special
this is what's
content.
Exciting to me. So Fantasy Zone is getting a port for the first time on the Genesis.
Sweet.
With a brand new easy mode, explode 8 planet, blah, 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 blah. If this is probably an M2 port, I'm going to assume that it's going to be very, very good. I love Fantasy Zone. Love it.
Star Mobile.
This
awesome. Is interesting.
I'm really excited to play this because this was unreleased on the Genesis, but this game was actually released on the PC Engine, and I own it.
Okay.
And it's a really neat idea for a game.
It's a puzzle
game. I'd love to play another version of it.
It's a balancing puzzle game? Is that what this looks like?
Yeah, okay. You drop pieces based by weight, and you you basically have to keep the scales from tipping.
And you can like eliminate stuff or you have to balance. Okay. A game called Spatter. Looks like it was a Mega Drive, looks like a Japanese game. Hop on your tricycle and pedal to pick all the flowers. So it's like a cute little action arcade little game.
Yeah, a weird Sega game from that era. And then an even weirder one, Super Locomotive, which was also a Sega arcade game from the 80s.
I've heard of this.
A train platformer.
Yes, so yeah, it's weird because you have to manage, I guess, the action on the bottom, and then on the top you have to change the tracks. It's really interesting idea. I never saw a game like that before. Devian Pie. Haven't heard of this before. It looks like it's a little paddle and ball game.
Yeah, this one I've never heard of, but I'm pretty excited about it because I love paddle and ball games. So
and that looks awesome. There's not too many of them. Puyo Puyo Sun versus Puyo Puyo Sun.
Two player versus mode from the third game. I don't know a whole lot about the series.
So
this Space Harrier 2, this is amazing. It's been it's completely being redone.
So it's not the original.
It's the original, but like, so it uses the same graphics and stuff, but you'll notice it's way, way smoother.
The
like that game
smoother.
Has never looked that good.
Wow.
So that scaling is nuts.
So
and Space Harrier 2 is a cool game, but like it suffered from the limitations of the system when it came out on the Genesis. So to like see it kind of fully realized is awesome.
So it's like closer to like an arcade Space Harrier.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what if Space Harrier 2 came out as an arcade game, basically, which is fucking great because I love Space Harrier.
No, I enjoy it. So this is package. I'm going to say right now, I am very impressed by this selection. I think the CD stuff could be more diverse,
robust,
which we get into. But just in terms of like 60 games, there's obviously popular games. There's uncommon games. There's games that are expensive that are hard to find. The special ones at the end are really a nice effort.
I love the special stuff that they do. I love, love, love that. I think honestly, it makes the whole package worth picking up for people who are interested in this sort of stuff. As long as you're into mini consoles, and I get it if someone's not. I think the people who have so far been disappointed by this list, and it's not to sound mean, but I feel like I don't know what you want. Do you just want surface level cuts? Because this is, to me, this is the sort of stuff that I love seeing on these collections. This is some real... These are some real deep cuts for people who like, you know, shooters or action games. There's stuff on there that you don't normally see. And like you said, the inclusion of a lot of games that are normally very expensive to get. Sure, you can just emulate, but, you know, you can officially go play Crusader of Senti for, you know, half the cost for the entire system of what it costs to get a loose cartridge.
Yeah, I don't see.
It's nice.
I don't know the Genesis library. I'm not going to pretend. But if I had to say, I don't see really a lot of filler on here. I see.
Honestly, Sonic 3D Blast, the Genesis version, is filler. But yeah, there was only two or three that I saw as we were going through it where I was like, I don't really need that.
Yeah, like something
looks great.
Like something like the Ooze, I'm like, well, that looks, I never heard of that, but like I never
heard
of it.
It's become a cult classic.
So that's what I mean.
A lot of people like it.
I mean, so like there's not a lot of, okay, what's the big things? There isn't, sports games, probably hard to get the rights to the sports games. Like, yes, I'd love to have an NHL game on here.
Yeah, NHL 94 would make everyone happy.
Or you get a Madden on here, or you get a Joe Montana football. The licensing might be too weird, but that's a big glaring thing to me, is not having at least one big sports title on here, like an NHL game. That's sure. The one big thing to me, is something like that. Other than that, though, and honestly, people that are complaining are probably not, they're not complaining because it doesn't have NHL 94. That's not why they're complaining, probably.
Right. You know, no, so, probably not.
And so between, between this and the first... you know, first mini, there's probably a pretty damn good, what was that, about 100, over 100 games, you know, 100.
Oh, yeah, if you don't want to do emulation, or you don't want to do, you know, a Mega SG and, you know, a flash card or something like that, but you want to play some Sega stuff, if you buy the first and the second minis, I think you've got a really great representative library of what made the Genesis special and unique to people who grew up with it.
Well, maybe the complaint is that the CD games, there's only a dozen, and of those dozen, you know, there's a few that are like, well, we really didn't need, I mean, honestly, we didn't need Night Trap on here, or Sewer Shark to a lot of people. Obviously, they're more iconic, but no one's going to be playing those, really. They're not buying it for that.
Right. That makes sense. I think, you know, it's on the docket here to bring up. I think people would have really liked to have seen, because they go so deep with their cartridge cuts, I think people wanted to see some of the working design stuff. I especially think people wanted to see the Lunars and Popful Mail.
Sure.
Especially Popful Mail, because it was the only English release of the game, and it's become prohibitively expensive for, you know, a lot of people. But Victor Ireland, the guy who ran working designs, and a real jerky guy, basically said no. He said, no, I'm not going to license out the translations I have for Lunar and Popful Mail, because it's just not worth it to him. Not enough money. Understanding is that he was offered the same amount of money that everyone else who licensed the game was. He's just a jerk who doesn't want to release shit.
So he'd rather make no money than some money.
Because he's that kind of he's that kind of dude. He'll cut off his nose to spite his face.
I mean, are we getting a working designs collection? Like what's
like, what's, I mean, that would be neat if there was something else in the works, but I don't think there is. I think it's just him sitting on top of licensing rights. And they're not his games, but he owns the translations. So, you know, Sega could retranslate them and re-release them. That's my understanding, but that's a lot of money to put into, you know, what I think a lot of people would see as three bonus games on a mini console.
Okay, so working designs would have to, like, re-license out the rights to the translation to do something like this. Is that what you're saying?
No, they could retranslate if they wanted to, but it would take a long time. Working Designs, I believe, owns the English translations to those games, which is why it's hung up.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Okay, well, that's a shame, because like the Sega CD stuff, it's cool that, you know, we get something like Final Fight CD, but you get like two Echo games on here and not one of the more expensive, like, Working Design. I'm not saying you need all of them, but having one or two would have been great. For people, like, for the reasons you said.
Yeah, it would have been great. It feels like that they went out of their way to get, like, the good deep cuts for the cartridge stuff, and they really phoned in the Sega CD stuff. That said, it's nice to see, but, you know, a lot of the stuff that people want to see on Sega CD is tied up with licensing and rights bullshit.
So the final thing is, I guess we get to the fact that when I railed against this a few weeks ago about they're making only 10% they did for the original Genesis. That's awful.
Yep,
obviously, and it's shocking. So it's going to cost you, it's $100 to get this plus shipping. So it's going to cost more than the first Genesis, which is fine. It only has one controller. It has the 1-6 button controller. Thank God it's a 6-button controller. Are the ports a Genesis port in the front?
I think they're USB ports.
They're USB. So the one you have is a USB, not a Genesis.
I'm pretty sure it's
USB. You can find the other third party Genesis. Everyone makes them. Retrobit makes them. Everyone, you know, they have. So it is more money, for sure. It's coming out in October. So with shipping, looks like it's $122, because I think it comes directly from Japan. I believe yes, it's imported from Japan. So hopefully they make more than that, because you can't find the original one anymore. Can you? That you can't find it new.
No, but I mean, it was released, and people who wanted to get it got it again, as we've talked about.
I didn't get one.
Podcast things aren't. You did it?
No, I almost did, and I didn't, and now it's like you can't get one for cheap, it looks like. So, like, this will sell out eventually. Maybe not at the first, but this will sell out. The first one sold out. Unless people were appeased by the first one and don't want the second ones, maybe they got all their favorite titles in the first one, you know? Like, maybe.
I mean, I think that's Sega's fear.
That's their fear? But
I think that's their fear.
You can get it used for $120 on eBay, the first ones. That's not bad. That's, I mean, it was $80 when it came out, so... So, I mean, that's, or was it 80 or 100? I think it was 80. That's right. Only the PlayStation was 100, and that was the worst one out of all of them. Infamously. And I should have bought that when it was on clearance for $20. I should have got that.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
Ian, we have a Patreon, don't we?
We do. Patreon.com/CUpodcast. You go. We do. I do.
You do?
I do. Almost weekly writing. We do, you get the full video podcast. You get access to the bonus bits that we do before we record the main podcast. We do hangouts once a month, and you get to vote in these poll topics.
And we have the enamel pin club. One of the tiers, you get a nice free enamel pin mailed to you. So this is our poll topics. In second place, this is close split. 44% is grading or reselling worse for video game collecting. And then first place, 56%. The top Super Nintendo games, according to a list curated by journalist Seth Abramson, who's done before for the NES. We've done these, and these are pretty detailed lists because Seth, in the methodology, combines lots of different sources, both print and online, including a certain Super Nintendo guidebook. He used the NES book, Ultimate Nintendo, for the NES list. So he's trying to like come up with a system in order to get a consensus here, which is nice. It's probably a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of work. So, and this is the top 100. We're not going to do the top 100. We'll do like top 25 here. There's tons of honorable mentions. This is off his website, his retrostack.substack.com. It's a membership. But looks like a lot of work went into this. So we'll start at number 25.
We're going to start at one. 25. Tetris Attack, also known as Panel de Pone, is a... definitely a great freaking game. You know, not Tetris-y at all, but, you know, Tetris got thrown around a lot in the 90s trying to get people to, you know, buy stuff with the name Tetris. And it's that classic, you know, you switch the two panels as everything rises, and sure, it creates chain reactions. And it's a lot of fun. Watching people who are really good at that game is a trip.
And Tyler 25, Super Ghouls and Ghosts. Surprised that made it that high, but okay. Obviously, it's an earlier title. People love it. It's hard as balls, but it's obviously super fun and polished. Who doesn't love little Arthur and his heart boxers? Super Punch-Out at 24.
It's a good game, and I mean, a lot of people, you know, remember it. It's usually one of the top 10 games I would get asked for about on the Super Nintendo at Luna. I never put the time into it like I did the NES one. And while I like the Punch-Out games, as an adult, you realize it really is just a, I don't know. They're more like puzzle games to me than anything sure. else.
I'm honestly. Just surprised to see it that high. I know it was a fairly popular game, but I'm surprised to see it that high. Kirby Superstar at 22.
Great game. Not surprised to see that on here at all. Also tied for 22 is Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy Kong's Quest. I'm actually surprised that's not a little bit higher.
Sure.
Because that's generally considered the best in a series that, while I don't necessarily love it, lots and lots of people love it. So
the next is Super Mario All-Stars at 19. This is an interesting one because it's a compilation. So it's always hard at least to grade something like that. I forgot how I graded it exactly. It's just like what is being offered between all the games, because you're not like reviewing the individual games at that point, because there's what, four different games right on here. So it's kind of tough to do that, but you do get the first Western release of the real Super Mario Brothers 2. And obviously you have upgraded graphics to the other games, and the engine, I believe, was slightly different than the original Super Mario Brothers. They might be the same on the other two, but I forget. But okay. Number 19, Street Fighter 2 Turbo Hyper Fighting.
And Final Fantasy 2. So Super Mario All-Stars, Final Fantasy 2, and Street Fighter 2 Turbo Hyper Fighting were all tied for 19. Street Fighter 2 Turbo Hyper Fighting, I agree. I think that's my favorite version of it on the Super Nintendo.
I gave it five stars.
Yeah, it's a brilliant game. The right size, the right roster of characters, the right balance at the time, the right speed.
They rebalance the characters.
Turbo is just a turbo or dash. Is it? That's what it's called on the PC Engine. Just a beautiful, beautiful like tightening of a game concept. I can't say enough good about that one.
And then Final Fantasy II,
huge. Obviously, big.
Big. Other comments on that? Were you a big fan of that one when it came out?
No, I just, you know, it was kind of, I think for a lot of people, it's the first story deep RPG they probably remember playing if they played in the US. It was an early release for the Super Nintendo. A big, big jump up for from the first one to, you know, the second one, because technically we missed two entries in between. You know, just a big moment, I think, for US RPGs.
ActRaiser are getting love at 18. I gave it 5 stars. I'm not ashamed of reviewing it as a 5-star game. It's a beautiful, gorgeous game all around. It's almost like the gameplay is like the weakest part of the game, but it's somehow it's still so beloved, which was like almost like a miracle when you look at a game like that. 17, Contra 3.
Sure. I actually don't know a whole lot about that one. I didn't really play it recently until I didn't play it until recently when I got the Contra collection. I like Hardcore a lot more. It's not a bad game, but I like the original. It's really good. Hardcore.
It's obviously really good. It's super tough. Yeah. Did I review that one for the, I might've reviewed it. I believe at least gave it 4, if not 4.5. I don't think I gave it 5 if I reviewed it. Turtles in Time, obviously, fantastic. Sure. Port, it's at 16. Beautiful, like you can you make the case that it's probably, you can say that for a 16-bit console, the best beat 'em up. You can make that case. Mega Man X at 15. I love Mega Man. No, I don't. I don't know anything about Mega Man X. I don't know if 2 or 3 is better than that, but 2 or 3 did not make this list.
No, one. I love X. I love the first X. I don't like 2, and 3 is really not great. In my opinion,
Castlevania 4 making 14 is, I don't want to say shocking, but this leads me to believe that when I see lists like this, that you have a lot of people writing these for these websites that don't know particularly maybe the breadth of the entire library. When you start to see all these popular titles getting these high spots, that I'm not saying it's not a bad game, Super Castlevania 4. I'm just shocked to see it this high. But that makes it at number 14.
This one doesn't shock me, just based on how people talk about it, how many people used to ask for it at Luna. It's not my favorite.
But popularity doesn't mean it's 14 out of, you know, 750 games. That's
no,
my point.
No, but yeah. I mean, as a person who doesn't like Super Castlevania 4 very much, I get why it could be so high. I preferred something like Bloodlines, which had, I think, a little more teeth to it. I feel like Super Castlevania 4 sounds and plays kind of sanitary. It's hard to describe. Sure. But to me, it's just, it's very indicative of like early Super Nintendo. It's kind of cleaned up. It doesn't feel as much like Castlevania as I would want it to.
Let me tell you why. When I see these lists, like, I'll just give you an example of what's on the, not on this list that should be on this list. There's none of this, the Super Star Wars games are on this list, for example. You don't see something like Mortal Kombat 2, which is like an outstanding port. I'm not saying it would have made the list, but I would not be shocked. It just missed it at 28, actually, on here. You don't see games like SimCity on here. You don't see a game like Sunset Riders on here. And that's not even like a deep, deep cut Sunset Riders. You don't see UN Squadron on here, and that's an outstanding game.
UN Squadron's on here, but far further down.
But I mean, for the top 25. Sure. You don't see Tecmo Super Bowl, any of them on here, for example. You can make the argument that Tecmo Super Bowl, the first one, is regards one of the best sports games ever. So that's what I mean. When you see some of these lists, you'd be like, okay, who was making these lists? Did they play a lot of these games, or did they just play the popular ones? And that's when I see stuff that high, I'm like, okay, maybe that's the case. But okay, I'm throwing a little shade. Super Mario RPG at number 12.
Sure.
Sure. That's all. I enjoyed the game. I played it probably more when it came out, honestly, at my cousins and watching them play. The cousins who had everything, and I liked it, and that's a high mark, but okay. F-Zero at number 12. This would 12 is high.
I love F-Zero, but this to me is a better example than any of the ones you already mentioned. I think F-Zero at 12 is insane, and is, like I said, it's a very good game.
It's very good.
It's not, but it's very not a 5-star. Singular in its focus. It's not like particularly There's not a ton going on. It's a weird game for 12.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot. It's extremely polished. The mode 7 is amazing.
I just mean in terms of like options and modes and stuff like that.
There's no two-player mode. No. And I gave it 4.5 stars. If there was a two-player mode, instant 5-star classic. There's no two-player mode. And otherwise, it's a good game. No Mario Kart on here. Oh, no, I'm sorry, there is. Sorry, I ruined it. I thought there wasn't. I glanced it. Star Fox at 11, again, too high for me, but I understand why. It's like the F-Zero thing where it was popular. Very good game. I would not have put it that high, but obviously it's beloved. Secret of Mana, number 9. I don't know anything about Secret of Mana. I don't know anything
about it. Good. Good Zelda clone.
Tied with that is Earthbound. At sure. 9. People love Earthbound. Cult hit. The definition of a cult hit. Number 8. Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island. I'm glad it's getting the love that it is because people don't usually bring it up too often. I unfortunately do not have the experience to talk about this as much as the first one, but you probably agree that's pretty good for that.
Yeah. This is another instance where I think just how these lists are made gets kind of in the way. Donkey Kong Country, I used to hate the game. I've really learned to enjoy Donkey Kong Country over the past few years. Vonnie likes it. I like playing it with her. But there's no reason the first one should be higher than the second one, which basically took the concept of the first game and tightened it
correct.
Up considerably.
That, again, goes to the argument that people are more familiar with the game, so they're going to rate it higher on their list. Like that's a huge flaw to me. That was not the highest reviewed one in the book, in my book.
No, two by all means, is a much better game.
Super Mario Kart number 5. I think I love it. This could be slightly high for me, but top 10, I'd put it in our top 15. There's some issues with it, but just the fact that it was such a groundbreaking game, it goes that high. And the other Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy 3 is number 5.
This one, I love Final Fantasy 3. This deserves every bit of its spot.
These next games are all 5 stars in a certain guidebook. So it makes, I don't have complaints about where these are placed.
No, neither do I.
Not all of these are 5-star in the top 25. There's a lot that are either, I think, 4.5 stars or 4. But okay. Super Mario World at number 3, tied with Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, great game.
You can put it higher.
On any given day, it's my favorite Mario.
To me, it's the best platformer ever made. It's a perfect game.
I have no complaints.
I wrote the review. I gloat about it in the review. Obviously, Chrono Trigger, it's my favorite RPG. Not that I'm a huge RPG guy, but there's a lot going on in that game with the real-time sort of battle stuff, with all different characters. There's branching story paths, all different endings. It's beloved. I didn't review that one. I honestly should go back and replay. I haven't played it in 20 years. I should back play it. And then number 2, Legend of Zelda Link to the Past. Beloved. Makes sense. Once you get to this top 3 or 4 or 5, you can basically swap things around and no one's going to complain too much.
But number 1, I was surprised to see number 1 sneak it out by 1 point.
One vote, basically.
And it's Super Metroid. As time goes on, and I noticed it at Luna, the game just gets more and more beloved as time goes on. I feel like it was a game that, at the time was not talked about nearly as much as it probably should have been. Not to say it was unpopular.
Probably because the franchise was as popular as it is now.
Right. Especially now looking back on it, I think this is a pretty good point in time. This makes sense to me as a point in time where Super Metroid would get voted into the number 1 spot. Okay. And it is. It's a fantastic fucking game.
So that's the list. It's like I said, it's a pretty good list. I don't agree with some of these. I think some are way too high. I think you could swap out some of these fairly easily with other games. And the placement is definitely wacky as hell.
I would not argue with any of them too hard, but there's definitely ones that, I think make less sense.
I would not have Super Ghouls and Ghosts in my top 25. There's way too many great games on the Super Nintendo, especially when you don't have sports games on here at all. Like you got to have 2 sports games on this list, in my opinion. That's the thing. Like the fact that sports games get so there's such a lack of respect for good sports games that these journalists or websites do. I don't understand it. This bias, I don't get it.
I think the problem really comes down to landing on just one.
Sure. No, I get it, but like No Tecmo Super Bowl game at all is so weird to me.
Yeah, that's very weird.
If you don't want to do an NHL game because you think the ports aren't as good as the Genesis, I get it. But on its surface, one of those NHL games is like a 4.5 star game. You know, just by default, they're excellent games. NBA Hang Time is a 5-star game in my opinion. I that's one I probably should have pointed out. Where the hell is NBA Hang Time? NBA Hang Time's at 141. Come on, man.
Yeah,
that game's incredible. That game's incredible. As an it's close to the arcade game at the time. That's what I mean. Like, some of these reviewers, not to throw shade, they don't have the experience of knowing a lot of these games. That's the problem. And some of them are super high. Like Doom, the fact that they ported Doom decently is amazing. It's not a top 100 game to me. It's a decent, competent port of Doom. I wouldn't put it like 91. That's just me. There's way too many other games out there that you could... Whatever. I did a review about it. You know what I mean? That's all. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by Monk Pack. Monk Pack offers low sugar, keto-friendly bars, which are plant-based, gluten-free, and non-GMO. They're the perfect snack for anyone who's trying to eat better or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste. Monk Pack keto granola bars and nut and seed bars contain 1 gram of sugar or less, 2 to 3 grams of net carbs, and each bar contains 150 calories or less.
Monk Pack bars have an amazing chewy texture and come in delicious flavors like sea salt dark chocolate, coconut cocoa chip, and caramel sea salt. This coconut cocoa chip one is my absolute favorite. It's a great snack. It's easy to eat in between doing the podcast and starting my other job. They're satisfying and they're filling.
Yeah, I love the nut and seed bars. Peanut butter dark chocolate's my favorite, and also sea salt dark chocolate. When I'm editing the podcast, just hanging out watching TV, watching some Netflix, it's a good snack. You don't feel guilty eating them, and they're delicious.
By shopping online, you can avoid another trip to the grocery store and have Monk Pack delivered right to your door. These bars are not just for people eating keto. They're a great snack for anyone looking to reduce their sugar intake while still enjoying delicious, flavorful snacks. They contain real ingredients that are delicious and nutritious for your whole family. And in addition to being keto-friendly, the bars are also gluten-free, plant-based, and non-GMO. There's no sugar, alcohol, soy, or artificial colors.
Get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering our code CUPODCAST at checkout, or just click the link in the description down below to get 20% off. Monk Pack is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll change the product or refund your money, whichever you prefer. So get some yummy, healthy bars. Go to monkpack.com and use our code CUPODCAST to save 20% off, or use the link below. We got voicemails.
We do. You tell them how to get
it. anchor.fm/thecupodcast. You go, you leave a voicemail, you keep it short, you keep it sweet, the way Pat likes it. And then you got a better shot of making the show. And let me just explain what will decrease your chances. Please don't leave multiple voicemails in a row. You get your best idea and you throw the one best idea you got for that few week period. You throw it out there. Don't hog my time up. Try not to. Here's the first one.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Miles from Portland, Oregon here.
Hey.
Pat, I've been rewatching a lot of old punk episodes. Why? And one of my favorite parts is when you're talking about how you're going to have the M82 demo unit set up to play at your funeral and then take it with you to your grave. I was wondering if you've given any thought as to which games you'll have in it at your funeral. I'm really interested to hear your answer, because I feel like that's a very different question from asking what your favorite Nintendo games are. Let me know what you think.
Honestly, it'd be about the same with some variety. It would be like a combination of like ones I probably experienced. I mean, I probably played the M82 demo unit. It came out, 88? So I was like, you know, 8 or 9. So you got to have games from like a few year period with some wiggle, like games from like up to like 90. You got to have a game like Super Dodgeball in there. I think you got to have a game like a DuckTales in there. You need like a Super Mario 2 has got to be in there. I'm looking at what I actually have in there right now. I got a Rad Racer in there. Nice variety. You only got 12 games to choose from. You know, games like that. Games that are, some are pick up and play. You remember, you can't go past the, was it 2 hour mark about? Was it 256 minutes? That's the max there. Maybe you throw a Zelda in there for fun. You know, just a combination of the hits and some of my, you know, personal favorites. I have Super Dodgeball in it right there. I think I might have come with it when I got it and I never took it out. What are the other guys? I have something in the way. I can't see the other games. My bad.
It's all from California, and I have two questions. So I was a bit too young in the early 2010s to really have been that involved in the whole community. It was basically just the odd episode of Classic Game Room or something. So I kind of wanted to know about some stuff that was around at that point, namely, what was MAGFest, and what was up with all those things, well, those sites like Screw Attack and Retroware.
Okay, interesting time. You want to say late 2000s, early 2010s, because retro was not as mainstream as now, because we were all like still in our 20s,
right?
And like mid to late 20s going to early 30s. So we weren't controlling all the decisions and things. So we were the ones still discovering and talking about these games that were largely unknown still. You know, you still, people were like putting up the first videos for some of these games probably in like the late 2000s that ever, you know, were appearing online. So it was interesting. I went to, you know, a few Screw Attack gaming conventions, not the first one. I went to, that's like my first convention I was a guest at in 2010. And my first MAGFest was 9 or 10, I believe. So the feeling more about the retro gaming community, and Ian could see if or he can chime in. It felt more insulated because it was kind of cut off from modern gaming more in terms of what was available, and it really was more of a celebration of a much, you want to say, nerdier thing then versus it is now. That's the way it felt, because there was less people I think involved with it overall, and we really were, it felt like, on the front lines of like being the ones that knew the most about these things, because we were the ones that were still trying to prop them up and to like spread the information. That's what it felt like for the first, like I'd say, you know, from like whatever, for my first 5 years, at least 6 years, 2008 of YouTube, like 2013 or so, that's what it felt like to me.
It was also just a different time because social media hadn't really taken over the way it has lately, and become more of the centralizing, you know, centralizing force. Back then, I think, to Pat's point, one of the reasons why it felt more separated from modern gaming was because the internet was still functioning more as a collection of websites, a bunch of different hubs. Some might have message boards, whatever, but you went to different places to get different news on different topics, as opposed to just loading up Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or whatever and seeing what all of the people who are into what you're into are posting and talking about. And yeah, I just, you know, I actually kind of miss that era of, you know, websites and, you know, the earlier times were fun because it was still people writing articles about, you know, developers and things like that we didn't know as much about as we do now. Yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. And I definitely agree that it felt more cut off, whereas now gaming is just kind of gaming.
Yeah, I mean, MAGFest was a big party, but like the first MAGFest I went to was before I went to the huge Gaylord Hotel. It was still fairly small, the first one that I went to. And then the SGCs were, I felt like I was the old man at the party, old man at the club at the SGCs I went to. Mm-hmm. I was like 29, 30, and the average age of everyone was like 20. I was like the average age probably. There was like kids there where their parents brought them to those conventions, for example. So like that, Screw Attack's a whole other conversation. Maybe one day when I'm feeling ornery, I can talk about my experience with Screw Attack stuff. But for now, we'll let that be.
Hey, Pat. Brent from Whippany, New Jersey.
You're right.
Pat, the podcast name's completely unnecessary. Nothing matters. Just wondering, you okay? You know, if you need to talk. All right.
All right, Brent, I'll reach out. We'll go to the Whippany Diner, and we'll we'll talk. There probably is a Whippany Diner.
Probably.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Chris from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Hi, Chris.
I've listened to you guys for a long time.
Right.
It's the first time leaving a message, so I'll jump right into it. Obviously you're known for your video game love, but you've also shown an aptitude for food. And given that you're such a, you know, productive entrepreneurs, I'm wondering if there's ever going to be any sort of food related product that comes out, perhaps a barbecue sauce, or who knows, even, we can go all in and do some olive oil. Also, I own a toy and collectible store here, and I have something that I want to send to Ian. Nothing insidious. He's going to enjoy it, I promise. So how best could we get you some fan stuff? All right. Thanks so much, everyone. Bye.
Well, I guess you can, if it's mostly Ian stuff, just DM Ian. He can give you an address, or if not, you know.
Yeah, I'd say just find me on Twitter. DM me. GrapeAidFade is my Twitter name, and we can set that up.
We should have done a hot sauce. Everyone does a hot sauce. We should have had a CU podcast hot sauce.
That's,
sauce.
No offense, but I do a food podcast, and like,
is that cliche?
I do a food podcast, and John and I will eventually do something food related, but I have no idea what it will be. Hot sauce is like what everyone does, so I've kind of like, I don't really want to.
It's like doing
do
your own
sauce.
Your own alcohol. You're not actually like opening your own distillery. You're just slapping a label on something.
Right.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Patrick from Elgin, Illinois. Pat. My question is for both of you regarding Tiger Electronic handhelds.
Okay.
What were your memories of them, and which ones did you own? Thanks.
I had Double Dragon. I had Ninja Gaiden. I had, it's over there. I had the Talking All-Stars Baseball, which I loved because you played defense on it. The original, you didn't. The original two-button one. This one was more like a traditional baseball game. And that's it. Those are my three. I had those three, and I loved them. And then my cousins and everyone else had the other cheap early ones, I remember.
I had a couple that I played a lot. One was the Batman one, the one based on the Michael Keaton movie. Really close to the storyline. and then I had a Double Dragon one that I fucking hated.
You don't like Double Dragon? You like Sway? Sway, Ian.
Sway. I had it. That one always drove me nuts as a kid. I always made it to the exact same fucking spot in like the third level every time and died, and I just couldn't.
Third level? Exactly. Come on, Ian. It wasn't that hard. Get the nunchucks.
And then I had the Simon's Quest one, which was actually pretty cool and like way more in depth than you would expect for it. So I like that. I had a handful of them. I got hand-me-down ones. You'd find them at garage sales after kids played them for 2 weeks and got tired of them. I probably had like five or six.
Rich kid.
Hey, Pat Ian. My name's Jason. I'm called from Bristol in England. I just wondered what you guys think of now that the eShop and 3DS is running its course. What would you have liked to see kept from the previous system? Maybe passed over to the Nintendo Switch. For example, me, I loved Street Pass. I thought it was amazing on the 3DS. I carried it everywhere with me. Would love to have seen that incorporated on the Switch. And also maybe like a little adapter that you plug into the top of the Switch so you can continue playing your DS games. Just wondered if there was anything you guys would have carried over. Thanks very much. Great podcast. Keep going.
The problem with the adapter idea is Nintendo is not going to be making that much money on that, so they don't want to do that. They'd rather re-release a 3DS game and sell it to you.
Right, exactly.
And then you're not street passing a Switch because, you know, the battery life is a lot different on a Switch versus a 3DS. You can just keep that thing closed and it just runs, you know, Wi-Fi.
No, the Switch has a way better sleep battery life. The 3DS was notorious for having an awful sleep life, which is...
What? Why does it keep that thing on a whole weekend if I went to a convention?
No, you couldn't. That thing drains in a day and a half.
Okay. I remember having a problem with that. You're saying you got to keep the Switch on idle and carry it around, it would be fine?
Yeah, it would be okay.
Street passing?
Yeah, you would be able to do it. That's okay. What I miss the most. I miss Street Pass. 100% I fucking miss Street Pass. I loved Street Pass.
Okay, so
you could totally do it. It's just because it's big.
Okay, I guess you're saying the screen would have to be off. So obviously, because that would drain power.
Yeah, you just... press the power button and it puts it in the sleep mode instead of shutting it off.
All right, I want to see that experiment. I want to see someone do a street pass mode on the Switch. I want to see how that would work. I want to see what that would do.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Max calling from Edison, New Jersey.
John!
I'm just curious to know if you guys have any games that eluded you during your time in collecting. Maybe a game that took an incredibly long time to find or one that was super glorious when you finally did find it. An example for me would be Disney's Hercules on PS1 that finally came into the game store I work at. Thanks, guys.
I have two. You can go first.
You go, because I'm having a tough time thinking of what mine would be.
Bible Adventures, when I finally found it at a Funko Land. I believe the one in Watchung, New Jersey, at the Blue Star Shopping Center. Everyone's probably, people around me, Blue Star! Yeah, the movie theater there was like a fucking Kmart or whatever, or Target, or whatever, Walmart. So I was reading about that stuff in like TSR's NES archive, discovering that. And then I went in there one day and I was like, holy shit, there's the baby blue. I was like, I fucking freaked out that it was there because he'd never heard of the damn game growing up. And somehow there's one at the Funko Land. It was probably only like $5 or $6. Who the hell wanted that? The second one was the one I wanted to play forever because I'd rented it when I was a kid. It was Best of the Best. And then it's not like a super hard to find game, but it's uncommon. And they never had it. I mean, at the Funko Land, they never had it. I looked for like over a year. It never came in. And finally, one day I found it at one. It was probably like, you know, like 99, you know, probably what it was, 99, 2000. I don't know why I didn't get it on eBay. Maybe it was before it was eBay. I was only like 18. I might have been only 18 or 17. I got it on eBay, I think, when I was 18. So it might have been before that, to be honest. But I wanted that game so badly. Those are my two.
I can't really think of – that's tough for me to think of a game because it's hard for me to remember back to, like, the pre-I-can-just-go-online-and-buy-it era, right?
Sure.
So I really – I don't fucking know, man.
I mean, something can still elude you online, I guess. Like, it took me forever to get the Panesian games, you know, like
that. Yeah, I guess I just haven't felt like – I still collect stuff, but I haven't been, like, hungry for a specific title that eluded me for a long time. I can't think of the last time that I was emotional, you know, over finding a game or anything like that. I just don't. I can say that I did find a record the other day, a couple months ago. It's an Edgar Froese album. I want to guess from Tangerine Dream. And I had been hunting for that for like 3 years. And it was just, you walk into the fucking record store and you start flipping and boom, there it is. And then I also happened to be looking for the Thief soundtrack and it was like the record behind it. Oh, so wow. I do have moments like that when I'm record shopping. I also do a lot less record buying online. So I do keep a lot of like the things I want to find for records. I can still go out and find them. Whereas video games, with video games, I definitely started ordering more stuff instead of waiting to find it out in the wild.
I guess I had more of that experience with manuals. Like, sure. I did buy manuals online, but one of the most joys I had going to conventions was flipping through hundreds of manuals at conventions and picking out the ones I didn't have. That was, like, to me, like, if you want to say a rush, that's what I enjoyed doing. Because you were physically going through them. And, like, yeah, I could have bought them online, but there were some conventions I'd buy 10, 20, 30, 40 back before I started compiling hundreds of them. And that was, to me, like, it was fun. Plus, they were like a 50 cents or a dollar each. There was a PRGE, the one that always has the setup with, like, the store setup up front.
Right.
I forget. I always forget the name of it. But there was one time they were, like, 50 cents each, and I bought 300 of the fucking things, and I didn't even care if I needed them or not. I was like, oh, this is so cheap. I'm just going to buy, like a majority of these ones. And then just, you know, sell them later, the ones I didn't have. And yes, most of them I didn't have, but that's what it was before I had a list. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Listen, guys, I've been listening to this podcast for the past 100 or so episodes. Last week's episode, where you talked about your job experience, Pat, is by far the most amusing I've heard, because it so reminds me of what I went through working. I was in customer service, and yeah, I can completely relate to basically anything you said. So keep up the good work and keep throwing those weird stories in there, okay?
Okay. I'll try. I've gone through most of them. I've gone through most of the Suncoast stories, most of the market research job. Not the first market research job. There's still bad stuff, but it's not as interesting. And then when I worked at the library in college, that was actually pretty cool working at the library. That was actually fun. Supermarket was hell, but that's like, come on, that's an entry level job. They're always going to be like that. So, you know, it is what it is. They, you know, they abuse you at those jobs. You know, they have you do everything. They have you doing stuff that you would have been doing, you know, 25 years later for $5 an hour.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Nick from Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Ian, I got a question for you. I just started playing Senran and Kagura Peach Ball for the Switch. Super fun game. I love the wackiness of it all. It's super cool. What are your thoughts on the Senran and Kagura kind of games, the cute kind of sexy stuff? And also, what other good pinball games are there that aren't like straight pinball, but more kind of just like fun, crazy pinball? I know Demon's Till is one, but what are some other suggestions you have? Thanks.
So I mean, I've said it before on the podcast. I like the Senran Kagura games. I don't talk about them a lot. I mean, it's just cheesecake. It's just boobs and, beat 'em ups or boobs in third person shooters or boobs in pinball. But yeah, they're fun for what they are. As far as other games that are, you know, pinball adjacent, I definitely would say, Yoku's Island Adventure. Is one that I believe is on the Switch that I had some fun with. But I think my favorite one that's just not a replication of another machine is definitely Demon's Tilt. I would, you know, I implore everyone to please play Demon's Tilt. It's a fantastic game.
I will at some point. A few more.
Hey, Pat. In like 92, 93, I got a Sega CD for Christmas, and I loved digital pictures games. But on top of that, I actually enjoyed Sewer Shark.
Oh.
But with that being said, there was a certain game that I truly loved called Dracula Unleashed. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but good God, it was so cheesy. It was great.
Well, too bad that's not included. That's not included on the Mini 2.
Yeah, I've never played that one.
You ever come across that one?
Yes, I've seen it at work before, and people have been excited to find it. So I'm sure it's got some sort of cult following.
I'm sure. All those goofy FMV games, I'm guessing.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is John from Los Angeles.
Hi, John.
I was wondering what both of your thoughts are on a video game series very near and dear to my heart, Castlevania. It gets mentioned fairly frequently in passing on the podcast, but I would love to hear about your favorite entries and any personal memories or opinions of Castlevania you may have. I hated the series as a kid because I thought the games were too hard, but I'm loving playing through the anniversary collections as an adult. Thanks for the podcast.
What a professional read that was on that question. 23 seconds in and out. That was great. Well prepared. Great audio quality. Are you a podcaster yourself, John? Anyway, personal opinions. I mean, I like the series for what it is. It's a goofy little monster whipping series. It's nice. It has nice fundamental gameplay. I mean, I like it. It's one of the earlier examples of using, you know, having sub weapons. So that's pretty cool. That have different pros and cons to each one. So that makes it interesting. And it's hard as balls.
I mean, I like the first one. I like how the first one is just kind of like a who's who of, you know, classic movie monsters, you know, that you go through, and it's a little bit campier. I always liked how they put like the film grain, like the film reel stuff film on reel. The side to make it seem like an old spooky movie.
Sure.
During the intro.
Amazing soundtrack.
What's up?
Amazing soundtrack, obviously.
Yeah, great soundtrack. My favorite entries in the series are probably Rondo and Bloodlines. But I like Symphony of the Night a lot as well. I think Symphony of the Night and Rondo are fun to play back to back because those are both Dracula X games. So it's kind of like the clear jumping point from the traditional style of the game to the like new, quote unquote Metroidvania style of the game. So I think those are always fun to play together.
Okay, do a couple more here.
What's that for? Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Jeff from Loxahatchee. Hey, since you two are both animal lovers, I wanted to know which lesser-known animal do you want more people to know about? Mine is the Great Poteau. It's an adorable-looking bird with big eyes and mouth. Thanks.
Oh, Okapi. I love the. Who doesn't love the Okapi?
Okapi is a good one. I really love I'm a huge fan of the Tasmanian Devils, and I feel like they've gotten a little bit more popular lately, but I would love people to learn more about Tasmanian Devils.
In those regions, New Zealand, Australia, all the marsupials don't get enough love.
However, I think, and unfortunately it's not there anymore, I don't know if he died or what, but the Bataleur eagle is one of my favorite birds.
Oh.
There used to be one at the San Diego Zoo. I always referred to it as the suns out, guns out birds because it would stand on its branch with its wings spread real, real wide.
It's black.
And it would just stay there the whole time. Just a beautiful, gorgeous bird. And you know, I'd never seen one anywhere before, and sadly, it's no longer in its enclosure.
Let's see, where is it? It's from Africa, and it is threatened, like most animals seem to be now. And most animals at the zoo are at least threatened. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that's where we're at with those. So support your local zoo. Help for conservation efforts, or give money to the World Wildlife Fund, which I do from time to time. We need that.
Hey, Pat and Ian, it's John from Ireland.
Hey,
Pat, on high stakes poker, who are your two best players ever, and who are your two that you want to have a beer with the most? For me, the best two are Tom Dwan and Phil Ivey. Beer with Antonio Esfandiari and Elia Lezra. Both of them just seem like legends to me, like nice guys. And Ian, thanks for liking my Predator poster tweet. I love that thing. Cheers.
You got to hang out with Sammy. How could you not want to have a beer and hang out? Sammy's a cool cat character. You would probably recognize him if you saw him. Sammy was the one that got to the finals against Moneymaker back in 2003. Looks like a sleazy-ish, sort of player, but, heart of gold probably. Who I want to play with? That's, I guess someone I want to hopefully defeat. Tom Dwan was known as one of the better players back then, kind of off his rocker, would go for insane bluffs that, looking back, like, because people didn't know how nuts he was, he should have been called on more of his bluffs. Phil Ivey was regarded as, one of the smartest, most well-rounded, fundamental players that no one wanted to face, and I believe he still is regarded like that. But in poker, it's almost like technology is that you always have to keep up with the strategy and the theory. You know, it's 10 years ago, it was totally different than now. But, I'd like to play professional poker at some point. That's a dream of mine. Okay, we're going to check in with someone we haven't heard from in a bit.
It's me, Andrew from Ukraine. Recently, I went to Eastern Ukraine to visit my friend who was serving on the front line. It was a trip through all country on a train, bank bed, 26 hours. Pretty boring. What games would you recommend for such long trips, besides Pokemon or Virtual Boy? Technically, it's portable. Anyway, thank you. Bye.
Glad to hear you're doing well, Andrew.
Yeah,
keep up the good work to you and your comrades there.
I think that's a really good time to maybe take a fighter, practice some combos and stuff. You can lab it out on like a Switch, playing a fighting game. RPGs always seem to be like the easy answer. Obviously, Pokemon's a big one, but I like first person dungeon crawlers. And then I really like pick up and play stuff if I'm going to be traveling. Because I have a tough time focusing. I like to take a bunch of I love having like a bunch of like little arcade type games, on a console. So shooters, action platformers, that sort of thing. Single screen maze games, whatever.
I like the strategy games because they eat up so much more time than you realize.
Sure.
I mean, I used to play on the DS, the cut down version. What was it? Civilization.
Civ Revolutions. That game was great. What a good way to cut down that game.
They cut out the roads. Who needs to build individual roads? Who the fuck cares? Like, that was a good, and they trimmed a lot of other little things here and there. So it was a nice compact version of the game, and you could play a game in like a couple hours. You can get through a game, like, if you wanted to. So it was like the perfect way to do it. Perfect bite size for travel. But, you take your time, you can go long in 2 hours, but you could if you wanted to. So the reason I like those sort of games later, because I don't usually get motion sickness on planes, but I have, depending on how much turbulence. So a game like that, you don't have to be constantly focused on. You can take your time choosing what you're doing, upgrading
that's a
your
good call.
So then you can put it down and relax versus a twitchy game where you got to be like super focused on. So I've never, I have played twitchy games before on a plane or traveling. I wish I could travel on trains more. Our country's not built for that, unfortunately. Most other ones are in Europe, that's what I say. I say a more slower paced game in general, you can take your time and relax and go back and forth with. But no, a mini collection of games is fun. I've done like the Sudoku ones where some of the planes still have it where they had the built-in games on the screen, but less do than they used to, but some still do.
Sure.
And those would be fun. There would be like little platformers on there, little puzzle games, and that stuff's pretty cool. Well, good to hear from you, Andrew.
Yeah,
we're not really
definitely.
We're not getting the news daily out of the Ukraine. We still should, because obviously it's a super serious situation, but it's like anything else. I guess people get fatigued hearing about it, but it's like it's still a war going on,
right?
It's not ending anytime soon. That's it for this podcast. It was fun.
It was a wonderful podcast. We had a delightful time.
My stomach was growling during the Q&A more than it ever has in the past, I'd say, year or two. I don't know what's happening.
I'm starving.
I usually don't get to this level of starvation during the podcast, but it was like going, I don't know if you heard that. I was like a little bit. I don't know what's acting up there. I don't know. Is my metabolism getting kicked into overdrive for some reason? I haven't eaten a lot of the meat sauce or sauce from from the can with meatballs. Pre-made meatballs from Sprouts are actually pretty damn good that you cook yourself. Better than anything. I got a couple of pork sausages. I mix it in, but I've been having the pasta they have. Maybe that's why I'm into Overdrive. All the protein and not a lot of carbs in the past few days. They have the edamame pasta. It's actually better than you think. Like, it's actually, it's served, it's like, obviously it's not real pasta, but the fact that it's like, there's like almost no carbs and there's tons of protein, it's like, oh, this is good. This is good. And then I put the sauce on it, it tastes fine. Yeah, some garlic and some, you know, some cheese on there, some Romano, some Parmesan. You do that. So that's
all right. I gotta go eat. Enough of this.
Hey,
you're closer.
You're closer to your fridge than I am. So you're good to go. All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone. Bye.